You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You may know Ben Hecht and Charles MacArthur's The Front Page from a number of film versions, including His Girl Friday, but now you have a rare chance to see it on stage at the Broadhurst Theater with an incredible cast. And joining me now to discuss its virtues are director Jack O'Brien and Dylan Baker, who plays the hard-bitten reporter McHugh. Welcome to our show.
Nice to be here.
For those who haven't seen it, what makes this such a great play?
Well, I'll dive in here. I don't think there's ever been a play like it, ever. Not before or since it happened, which was 1927-28. It was written by these two boyos who were actual hard-boiled journalists from Chicago. And Charles MacArthur, as we know, married Helen Hayes, famously. And
both of them went on to write a lot of important
plays. Yes, they did. They wrote other plays, and then they did a lot of screenplays, and they did a lot of stuff. But this was their first show, and those of us who have dug into the denizens of it are wondering how the hell this possibly came to be. They pretty much gutted their own history in Chicago and used actual people only vaguely changing the names.
Now, Dylan, what's it like reading it versus playing it? Does it turn out to be different than you imagine while you were reading it?
Well, playing it is fascinating because the world that they lived in obviously was a high-powered, fast-pitched world of reporters by the seat of their pants having to fight to get their say, having to really challenge everything in order to come up with something that the readers would be interested in.
Scoops.
And at the same time, they were all in the same room because the play is set in this press room that's given over to them in the county courthouse or the city courthouse of the Chicago.
Didn't it spawn a lawsuit?
Oh, several.
A lawsuit. Everybody took flung mud at that.
Because they saw themselves in it?
They did. The sheriff was castigated. Look, Chicago was rife with all sorts of shenanigans and corruption.
Unlike today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Unlike today. And so it was open field. It was open season on that, and they took advantage of it.
And for a play that opened in 1928, it feels strangely prescient. It's dated on one level, but a lot of the themes are themes that we recognize today. Why hasn't it been performed in a commercial run all that often? The last time, I think, in New York, it was in 1969.
Look, it's 27 people.
Ah.
And the economics today, in 1928, actors were a dime a dozen, I'm afraid, and they thought nothing of putting huge companies. But there's a vast amount of our history that we can no longer afford to do. And the last time it was done here, it was done at Lincoln Center, which was, of course, in the confines of that kind of theater.
Yeah, I was thinking of a big commercial run like the Broadhurst.
It has not had. This is the first time in ages.
Since you mentioned that actors were a dime a dozen, a major part of the plot here is that Hilty Johnson is going to leave Chicago, go to New York, because he's been offered $150 a week.
That's right.
A sum that just seems beyond belief to all of us stuck back in Chicago at our $30 or $40 a week.
And there's Bobby Morse coming on stage, and they say, "What's your salary?" He says, $40 a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, these were tough times.
And what's fascinating?
Well, actually, a dollar an hour was the standard wage into the late 50s. Uh-huh. So if you worked a 40-hour week, you did make $40.
That's exactly right.
And you can tell from Hilty Johnson that really, even though he says he's going to get this $150, it seems like he hasn't been paid anything years.
No,
because they're all broke all the time.
They
get some money and boom, it goes away.
It's very much a laugh out loud comedy, and yet it's about some pretty dark stuff.
Yes, there's a lot of melodrama in it.
So how would you describe its structure?
Well, it's, you know, we don't have patience anymore. I mean, you know, this is a three-act play, which you will practically never see, with two intermissions. And there's, and very often we cobble them together and make them like one intermission. But you cannot do that with this play. It's because of the structure. It sort of starts realistically in a kind of fascinating Chekhovian way, where you suddenly get all the characters and you get the world, and it's a very serious situation. A man is going to be executed and they're all hanging around, and yet the execution itself is politically motivated. So if they execute it at a certain time, they're going to take advantage of it in the upcoming election, blah, blah, blah. So it starts rather gently. We do it as a whirlwind pace because you have to. But it isn't filled with action until finally it just keeps mounting.
And the parts that are going to be important are often treated as tertiary, not important at all, just thrown away in asides. And the audience has this kind of constant wash over them of things that aren't going to be all that important. And these little teeny things that start getting thrown in start adding up. And everybody tells them, oh, don't, that's just a, that we know that. Yeah, that guy's guilty. He's going to die. Boom, we're done.
A lot of misdirection.
Yeah.
Lot of misdirection.
Did you cut much of it?
Not really, no. We you know, the interesting thing is that we found, when we started working on it, it was Nathan Lane and I were by ourselves working through various scripts. And the accepted, the biblical, honored acting version that is available was done after the New York run. And it was basically laundered because there's so much really tough language in there.
And they cleaned racism it up. Racism and
yeah,
all sorts of other.
Yeah, oh, unbelievable. And they cleaned it up basically to make it more tolerable to the hinterlands. But we found the original script. We found this beautiful edition that was done almost reverently by the authors themselves, with poetic descriptions of the characters and the mood, the kinds of things you never read in a play at all. And we sort of conflated all that into this version.
Now, there's a lot of overlapping dialogue. All the reporters wind up talking at the same time, and often many different things are happening at the same time. The audience feels it's necessary to hear every word. How do you work out the right volume?
Well, it's interesting. It's Jack uses this metaphor a lot, but like a little jazz combo. There's lots of different instruments going on, playing different things. But which at which point is taking the lead? Which is underneath and just providing some things? You need a director. You need a somebody to bring that out. Okay, I need to hear that. Okay, put that down. I'm not interested in that. But keep that to the side. And we worked for weeks and weeks on that because, of course, telling an actor, oh, by the way, that line you read, no one wants to hear it, could be difficult. But Jack has assembled a bunch of veterans, and we all go, oh, yeah, okay, that's gone. That's down. This is up. That's out. So we've listened to that, and we take great pride in making sure that each night the audience gets exactly what they need to hear in order to have Nathan Lane come on and destroy them in laughter.
And Nathan Lane doesn't come on till fairly late.
In the second act.
Now, I mentioned the overlapping dialogue. Was that in the original version?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because in the film version, His Girl Friday, Howard Hawks was credited with kind of introducing that to movies where people stepped on each other's lines.
It is clocked at the fastest rate of dialogue that anything has ever been filmed, His Girl Friday. And it's fascinating to sort of lurk around the audience because people saying, oh, yeah, this comes from This Girl Friday, His Girl Friday. That was the original. It wasn't the original. And that was Howard Hawks actually having a reading at his house in Hollywood. And the guy that was supposed to do Hildy didn't show up. And they were ready to read, and his secretary was there, and he said to her, "Will you read it?" And she read it, and they heard this woman's voice with this strange Hildebrand epithet called Hildy, and suddenly an entirely different version was born.
And Rosalind Russell played it wonderfully.
She did indeed. And here, this is not often known. She was, they were getting ready to really do it, and she said, I don't have enough laughs in this show. And of course, it's sort of true. You see how it's built. Hildy does feed a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And she had her brother-in-law come onto the set and write her some jokes.
The Hildy character is really a straight man for a lot of the other characters. Now, you directed a version of His Girl Friday at the National Theater. Was that good preparation for this?
Well, I try to remember. John Guare did this conflation of both this play and the film script. And he did a brilliant job of it, but they're sort of at war with each other in odd ways. I search back through my mind to try to remember. Most of the difficulty I had in London was getting the British actors up to that pitch, mm-hmm. because we're hardwired for fast stuff here, and that is not the pace over there. So I was kicking their butts daily, and all I remember was saying, faster, faster, faster. And they would look at me slightly sleepily and say, is that tea? Is that any tea?
What were rehearsals like, Dylan? How long did you have to get all this complicated stuff?
It was pretty fast. It was pretty fast. And as I said, Jack assembled a lot of veterans who had to realize, okay, we better come in ready to go on this thing. There's no finding it as you go. And actors in rehearsal will sometimes sort of try and take a rehearsal where I'm just going to react off of what happens. Well, every time that somebody tried it, it was a disaster, because if you're not thinking about that next line and about that next cue, you're in big trouble. And even when we were on stage for the first couple of weeks, it would be, now I know that guy is going to say something, and I'm, is that it? Oh, no, that's not it yet. Here it is.
Are you still tweaking things?
No. I would say every time that you try to play a little something with a line, everybody on stage crocks their mind, says, what's that?
What
are you doing over there? Because we're doing the play.
Well, what if somebody misses a cue or the timing does fall off?
It happens. It happens. Actually, the other night, Chris McDonald was, you know, got caught up with a prop and dropped the line that kraut quack, whatever. And I just came right out with it. I mean, it was just like a beat late. Everybody went on. We just went on.
You picked up his line.
Yeah, we just all know the line, so we just kept going.
Our very esteemed producer, Scott Rudin, granted me a great, great gift. I had 9 days with these people last summer, and they all came in from everywhere. And we sat around a table for literally a little bit more than a week, and we looked at the piece like a piece of music, so that I was able to break it down and rehearse almost fugally the entrances that the actors had to do, so that when they left that period, everybody thought, oh, this is what it's going to be like. They went away for a month, allegedly to learn it, which most of them did pretty well. And so by the time they came back, they'd had this little summer camp, and they knew what the orchestration was, and then they sort of knew how to attack it, or we'd still be in rehearsal.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it didn't hurt that you had this amazing cast.
Oh, my God. No.
Not just Dylan Baker here, but also Nathan Lane, John Slattery, John Goodman. Robert Morse has just a small part.
A hilarious part.
Holland Taylor, Sherry Renee Scott, it goes on and on. It's quite a cast.
And we're talking about this new production of The Front Page. It's at the Broadhurst Theater at 235 West 44th Street with Jack O'Brien, who directed. He's won 3 Tonys. Maybe he'll get a 4th for this one. Dylan Baker, and we'll talk a bit about some of the TV stuff that you've done as well. Dylan Baker is one of the reporters, major role of McHugh. And we'll continue after this. We are back with Jack O'Brien, who's directed a new production of The Front Page. It's currently at the Broadhurst Theater at 235 West 44th Street. And with Dylan Baker, who is one of the 30 actors in this. Even the smallest roles wind up, the small characters have stand-up moments. How unusual is that in a play?
Very unusual. I mean, the other thing was to try to get a company of this caliber was sort of stunning in and of itself. And I love the fact that we started, you know, at this point in my career, we know each other, most of us. So you can call people on the telephone, you're not supposed to do that, and say, you want to be in this play? And they all said, yeah, of course I do. And I have to say, the greatest pleasure for me in doing this was watching these actors, all of whom are inestimable people worthy of their own productions, watching them watch each other act. It was just a thrill.
John Slattery, who plays the star reporter Hildy Johnson, gets a huge laugh when he says that he is retiring from the newspaper business to go into advertising.
Yes, it's hilarious.
You weren't thinking of Mad Men when you cast him in that part.
Of course not.
And the first time, you know, we had our final dress, and it was all these people that were just screaming and hooting. And when they laughed at that line, we all were like, I see. But that'll probably just be tonight. Well, it's every single night.
It's a great it was night. The night I saw it. I mentioned race. The person who's in jail is accused of killing a black police officer, and the mayor and the sheriff are really concerned about getting the black vote.
Yeah, it's
something that sounds like yesterday.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of bigotry in it. There's a lot of racial tension in it. It's shocking how little we progressed, frankly.
Now, did you have people in mind when you were casting it, people you'd worked with in previous productions?
Well, sort of. I mean, you know, I go back with John Goodman to the 80s, to the early 80s, as a matter of fact. We did a play up in Buffalo years ago before I went to the Globe. That was, you know, before Jesus lost his sandals, for heaven's sake. So
that is a long time
ago. It is a long time ago, and I don't think he ever found them either.
John Goodman plays the shady Sheriff Hartman.
He's just a delicious guy, and all of these people. I mean, like Dylan, you know, how often do we get him on the stage? We had a history at Lincoln Center years ago, and then it never occurred to me that I'd get him for this.
And I almost didn't recognize you, Dylan, when you first appeared on stage. McHugh from the City News Bureau is a hard-bitten reporter in this press room of the criminal courts building. One of many competing newspapers in those days. I guess there are 8 different newspapers that are listed in the playbill, but this is a very different character from the TV characters we've seen you in recently in The Good Wife and The Americans.
Yeah, it's
you're nicer here, although not lovable.
I think he's lovable.
I think it's, you know, it's fun. Just doing a play, it's your chance to actually take a character from the beginning to the end, and not having it sort of broken up by an editor or by a director saying, "Oh no, you've got to be much tougher. You've got to be mean. You've got to take, you know, that person's head off." Whereas in a room, you're working with someone, and Jack and I, as he says, go back a ways, and the thought of being in a room in a rehearsal period where everyone's going to feel comfortable because we are going to be given latitude, we're going to be given a chance to fail at things, try this, go there, do that, and have somebody who's looking at it and saying, this works, that doesn't work, let's try this, go a little further here. It's just a joy. And I also have to say that I've been in other rehearsal periods with people who have some bit of success, as some of the actors in our play do, and sometimes they'll pull a card like, well, wait a minute, just because this worked before or they did it this way, why should I'm a different person, and what I come up with might be fantastic. And there's just none of that.
You didn't have that kind of ego stuff to do.
There was none of that.
Not at all.
It was just what is best for the play. How can we get this story told in the best way? So
Molly Malloy is one of the most caring people on stage, and she's a prostitute. How unusual was it at the time to have a character like Molly and to give her virtue, the kinds of virtue that the others don't share?
No, yeah, this was totally shocking. To have at the beginning of a play in a newsroom, suddenly a prostitute walks in off the street and bawls them out for the despicable way they've treated her and manipulated her. This was totally unusual. And of course, she's singular in the play because she sort of owns the melodrama part of it. I mean, she eventually flings herself out a window. And for all we know, she's dead. She doesn't die. But we're told this. We don't know that.
Well, I worried for her because it looked like she really jumped out of a high story
shirt
it's window.
Certainly
very
did.
Effective.
Absolutely.
I hope there's people catching her down there or a mattress.
She's well attended, believe me.
Dylan, is it true that you studied alongside Chris Noth and Patricia Clarkson at the Yale School of Drama?
Yeah, they were
That must have been some class.
They were classmates of mine at Yale School of Drama. And and Chris actually has been to see the play. He was there a couple of weeks ago, and he still called out. He said, "I when you did that thing, I saw that back at Yale."
It's your usual bag of tricks.
That's right.
Going back to your childhood, right?
When you're in a recurring role in a TV show like The Good Wife, which is no longer around, and you're no longer going to be in The Americans, even though that's going to have another season. But when you're doing that, is it kind of like doing theater? Because...
Well, it's interesting. I will take something like the writers on The Good Wife were just incredible and never shied away from giving me the most ridiculous, wonderful things to do. But on The Americans, I found a different thing, which was as we started working through it, I started saying, hey, you know, I could do this and take this a little bit and be a little bit funny. And the two writers were like, no, I don't think, because they knew where the character was going. So at first I was kind of like, all right, I'll do what they want, boring as it is. And then this rich, rich texture that they had put in place became much more interesting than anything I could have come up with.
And they never told you that. They never.
Does it help that The Good Wife, which took place in Chicago, and The Americans, which takes place in Washington, were both shot in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, ride?
We do the front page right on, right in Times Square. So.
That's right.
Jack, your character you just got nominated for a documentary called Becoming Mike Nichol.
I did. Wasn't that charming?
It is the best documentary, too. I've watched it a couple of times.
This unlikely friendship that I developed with Mike over the years ended up with us occasionally having these endless luncheons. And, you know, I had written this book, Jack B. Nimble, which he liked enormously. And I kept saying, Mike, you got to write a book. He said, I can't write a book. I can't do that. And of course, he was a superb anecdotalist.
And he was probably one of the most open interviewees I've ever had on the show. He told stories that most people would consider family secrets.
Oh, of course.
He was perfectly happy to talk about them. But before you go, looking at some of the projects you've done over the years, Hairspray, Macbeth, Il Trittico, at the Met, Stoppard's The Coast of Utopia, is there any through line there other than their theater?
They pay me to do it.
Is that it?
It seems to put food in my dog's stomach. So you know, no, I don't know. Everybody says this is so unusual. I don't know why it should be. All I'm trying to do is put some version of truth on stage, and it doesn't matter if it's to music or comedy or what have you. You're really looking for the real thing.
Is this an open run?
No, are you kidding with those people? I'm surprised they're showing up tonight. They're all, no. Nathan leaves the day after we close and goes to London to play Roy Cohn in Angels in America at the National. And they all have other jobs, so no.
You have another TV series where you're going to be playing some person that we don't like?
I don't know what I'll be doing, but I know it will be something with a heart of gold.
Meanwhile, we still have you in the front page, currently at the Broadhurst Theater at 235 West 44th Street. My great thanks to Dylan Baker and Jack O'Brien for being on our show.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Leonard.